going on, everybody? And thank y'all so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, in studio with me, the traveling man, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios.
For now.
For now.
We're going to move it. We're going to move it, folks. We're working on a full-time studio.
Yeah, I know. Looking forward to it.
I have been talking to the owner of said studio property. They're taking it over next week.
Oh, man.
So, we're going to have a good one. We're going to actually have one set up. You can see video of it. We'll start doing all the shows where we can leave all of our gear up, our cool light boxes. It'll be a great time. Kyle, tell them what we've been doing.
We've been traveling around to Tennessee again. It seems like our home, our second home, by the way. I should just buy a second house up there. I mean, I feel like we're going up there all the time.
Go, Brahma, live with Clay.
Yeah, we've been invited back, thankfully, again, to do another Halloween episode with Ducks Unlimited. And this time we did it a little bit different.
Yep.
Normally we do everything in their amazing studio. We did one show in their studio. But then for the second show, if you watch us on social media and stuff, We filmed it outside around a campfire.
It's great.
For a little spooky edge. I think it's going to be amazing. I don't know because it hasn't been edited together.
I hope it's as good as what it felt like.
On the other side of the lens, or the camera lens, it felt good. I mean, how creepy was it to not add in post, y'all, but while we're doing it, you hear a barred owl, you hear coyotes.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like...
The coyotes came within probably 150 to 200 yards of us, maybe a little, probably about 150 yards or in. Behind us and start calling. The owls were all around.
Yeah.
Matt can sound just like an owl.
He's very good.
It is crazy.
And of course, you did hear some sirens. I mean, we were in Memphis.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you are in Memphis. You're going to hear some wild stuff from time to time. But all in all, a great time. It looks amazing. I hope y'all enjoy it as much as we do. We took a whole new twist. Look, it's just us telling stories, the things that we've been given. We had to, Kyle and I had to flex our big brains that we don't have and memorize stories to tell, come out. Because there's a lot of stories rattling around in our heads, if y'all aren't aware. There's a lot of useless information rattling around up there, too. But it's hard to keep. So we actually did work. I'm proud of the way it come out, at least from what I saw of it. So I hope y'all like it. And if you do, there's going to be a lot more of it because that's kind of stuff Kyle and I are probably going to be doing.
Yeah, we've already thought about some other for next Halloween. We've already come up with a rough model of what we want it to look like.
This is what happens. You let Kyle and I sit in the car together and drive for endless hours. We come up with the most insane ideas. If it wasn't rated like MA, we would probably record that. But it gets a little mature whenever we get riled up and fired up. We can't help it. It's just the way it goes.
I was very interested in seeing how the lighting guys worked.
Those guys were amazing.
To light a set outside, you have the glow of the fire. Yeah. And for anybody that doesn't know, like, it's really hard to get lighting and make it look
harder
authentic.
Than I realized.
You know, like, if you jack your ISO
so much.
Up too much, then it looks grainy. Like, they did an amazing job.
Well, and reflections.
Whoop, they're moving it around. I'm like,
light reflecting off of one thing where it's reflecting before a fire and not behind the fire. So you have to, dude, I learned so much talking to those guys. I think it's one of those deals, like any other job. You don't appreciate it till you've really seen it done, right? So, like,
you take
whether
it for granted whenever
well,
you
yeah,
see it.
Whether it's building a car, building a home, putting in water lines, electric, sewer, wastewater, all the way up to your favorite commercial or television series that you watch. After talking to Chris, which our buddy Chris has got a laundry list on his IMDb of all the places and all the movies and television. I mean, Chris was one of the key audio guys on Stranger Things. Like, he's no joke. And then he brings his buddies in that do this lighting. It's one of those deals that you just, I think I appreciate it more now after seeing
it. Yeah, because when you're watching a television show or a movie, you're never watching a scene and going, man, I wonder how they lit that. Like, you never think of it.
Sometimes
you do. You're a psychopath. Nobody does that. Nobody does that.
Sometimes I like Roger Deakins, okay?
I was telling everybody on set not to make eye contact with me and silly stuff like that.
He was saying that. He was saying in his writer
you
that
these
you can't.
Stories.
Yeah. And I was the opposite. I was like, I want everybody to sit and watch me eat.
Well, let's get into the stories, folks.
Let's do it.
First of all, I want a little announcement I want to say. There's still to this day, we've been doing it for 13 years.
Yeah.
We still get people that email us and tell us that they have a story. Do they want us to send it to them?
Yes. Stop
yes.
it.
Yes. You don't have to ask. If you're going to waste the time to email it, just email the story.
If you have to ask if we want it, no. I don't want it. I don't want it. You already know we want it. send it. If you're going to send it, you know what? Asking us if we want a story is like announcing online you're leaving a group. Nobody cares. Just leave.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, we want your story.
Every 6 months.
Don't ask. You're listening now. You hear my voice? Please send your story. I want to read it. Don't ask me on an email if I want to read it.
Oh, I do. Every time I cancel my HBO subscription, I email the CEO and let them know.
I usually do that every week. Every month I cancel everything I'm signed up for and talk smack, and then I re-sign up for it the next day. Just to be a pain. Right? Just to be a pain. Speaking of being a pain, Kyle.
Yeah, I got the story here. What's up?
Lay it on me.
Check this out. It says,
here we go.
Hi, guys. The experience I have to share today is not my own, but my son's.
Uh-oh.
I offered to write to you for him to save you guys from the constant ums and bros of a preteen boy storytelling.
Wait. Kyle he's raised some of those as recent. He probably could have figured it out.
Oh, it's so annoying. Very annoying. I feel your pain. It says, I have his permission and his help in recollecting everything that happened 4 years ago in our small town of Abilene, Kansas. The house that we lived in is physically very close to our neighbors, and we were all very close friends with them too. My son and two neighbor boys around the same age would play from 7 a.m. to well past the streetlights coming on, especially on the weekends. This night was a Saturday night, and they were having their time of their lives playing cops and robbers and making ramps for their bikes and doing whatever else they could do when they let them play. Every once in a while, me or the neighbor kid's mom would step outside, check that they were still alive and getting along, and then head back in. Around 8:30, closer to 9, my son burst through our front door and went straight to his room. Now, this was weird. The boys would never risk going inside and possibly getting caught by parents who would tell them that it was too dark and time to stay in. Thinking the boys had an argument or something, I followed him to go into his room and get the rundown because it takes a lot for him to be so upset and he would want to stop them to make him want to stop playing. He would live outdoors if we let him. He was visibly shaking and crying and on the verge of hyperventilation and completely out of breath. I knew something bad happened. I asked him what happened, and he said him and the boys were running between our houses, shooting each other with Nerf guns, and he had found a good spot besides the wood fence, and he squatted down. He peeked around the corner and saw what he describes as a static man, taller than his father.
Uh-oh.
And wider too. Now his dad is roughly 6 foot tall. He said when he seen the static man, the shape turned to look at him for a second and charged towards him in a sprint from the alley, which would have been about 10 yards away. I asked if his eyes could have been playing tricks on him. It was dark. Maybe it was his friend running because he had found him, but he says no. He looked back, frantic, when he got to our porch and his friends were on the other side of the front yard. They saw him and started walking over and asking him where he was. He said it had no face and was glowing, black and white static, like what happens on Grandpa's TV in the basement. It's been 4 years since this happened, and he still brings it up every once in a while. He loves scary movies, and we recently watched The Ring. He was less freaked out about Samara coming out of the TV than he was about the TV turning into static. We listen to your podcast whenever we get a chance to and have never heard about this one. Thanks for taking the time to read this, Bristany.
I've only heard the one story that I did not long ago about a static guy, like a 2D static, because we'd brought up about the glass dude from Young Sherlock
Holmes.
Yes,
that's right. Yeah.
You don't hear. This is one of those things that's kind of new.
Yeah, but right? What could it be?
Dude, I have no idea. It's just a static man.
6 foot tall, static looking man.
I got it. I know exactly what it is. I know what it is. Go on.
What is it?
It's Glimmer Man not tuned in right.
I was going to say, that's what
he's
I was going to say.
He's out of tune.
I was going to say his cloaking, for whatever reason, is malfunctioning.
Wet.
Yeah, remember how
that's it.
When he comes up out of the water, he has to go to his arm on
his
wrist.
Traveled hundreds of thousands of light years only to have water foil his plans.
right. Just like the M. Night Shyamalan. The aliens are killed by water, so they go to a planet that's 70% water.
It's
Does that make any sense?
It.
Remember when he comes out of the water, he has it on the wristband. It opens up, and you have to go...
Yep, it's got all the crazy things.
And then it'll tune itself in.
Yeah. That's crazy. The static man.
The static
It's man. One thing if they're small. Like, I remember the report of one is like, it's like a 3 foot static dude. It's another thing when it's a 6 foot plus static dude. You're like, that's... static. You know, the only way to beat them is with dryer sheets. I said it. For those that don't know about Abilene, Kansas is the end of the Chisholm Trail. So if you've all ever kept up with any kind of, well, I mean, all the way back to Lonesome Dove, if you go back into 1883, all that. Imagine the King Ranch, because it basically kicks off down in the King Ranch. I think it kicks off in San Antonio and Gonzales is where the Chisholm Trail started, goes all the way up through, like basically up 35, up through Austin, Waco. It came all the way up through here, through the Stockyards in Fort Worth, through Decatur. I think it cut up through Oklahoma City, found its way all the way into Abilene. And Abilene, Kansas is where it stopped, because it was, you could make way more money driving cattle from Texas to Abilene and then loading them on the train cars and shipping them to Chicago than anything else. Like, I legitimately think that they were paying like $4 a head down here. And if you got them to Abilene and on the train car, they were 30 to 40 a head.
Yeah.
So that's the reason those old ranchers made all that money. But if you go to looking, for those that don't know, you want to dig into Abilene, Kansas, there was a lot of shootouts. There was a lot of wild stuff went down in Abilene, Kansas.
Yeah.
It had to.
Yeah.
Because it was the Wild West. That's just how it was.
Very cool.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I got something here that's a little wild. And we've talked about this in the past. We've covered this before. Of these manta rays, right?
Right.
These flying manta rays. Lon sent this over that he got one that came in from one of my favorite places, North Carolina. Listen to this. It says, I've seen a gliding manta ray cryptid in March of 2015. It looked as if it were a living creature cloaked. You ready for this? Think of the Predator movies. And I watched it glide fluidly, gracefully, and silently directly over my head, less than 100 foot above. Now, that's very strange. Made me question a great deal about the world we live in. The sighting occurred about 5 years ago in the small city of Gastonia, North Carolina. All right. Well, it wouldn't be five. It would be 10 years ago. I should also mention that I witnessed this creature before I even knew what this cryptid was or a cryptid was. And it was only after Googling what I had seen that I realized that other had seen the same thing. The reason I'm posting about this is that I witnessed something similar this evening. It looked like a rigid line of very dim Christmas lights flying through the air. There was no fluid movement, just horizontal motion while aligned vertically. The lights were dim, almost hard to see. The object was flying with the wind on a slightly breezy night and didn't appear to be very high in the sky, maybe only about 200 foot. Both of these sightings really make me question what types of creatures are flying around in the sky unseen. So, in 2015, they witnessed a manta ray. And then not long ago, they witnessed what looked like a string of lights. Now, when you think about the string of lights, think this. Think of when you see the animals in the deepest depths of the ocean. That's what these things tend to look like. They may be completely transparent, but they have that crazy that bioillumination. Those are the lights that they see. You can usually only see the ripples when it's the edge or the fringes of their little flippers or wings or whatever the heck it is that's going on that whole deal. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but we have gotten a ton. And if you go and look, there are endless encounters of people seeing these things flying. And then it always makes me think about the goo that fell from the sky, what looked like a jellyfish goo, all of this. So maybe there's more to it. There's others that are always flying around.
Yeah, man, it's such an odd phenomenon,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Very crazy. We got another listener story. Ooh. Here. This comes from Emily in Montana. Check this out.
Hey guys, this is Emily from Montana. I'm just calling in with a few ghostly experiences that I've had over the years, and a couple that still freak me out when I talk about them today. The first one I want to talk about is something that happened when I lived out in a very small town growing up. I was around 16 when this happened. I had just been learning more about spirituality, and I've always been very curious about the paranormal. And so one day in my house, I decided that I was going to try to contact some sort of, you know, spirit from the other side. And I meditated, and I felt like I did connect with someone, and I thought it was a little girl named Willow, who had died on the property. I don't know why I thought that. That's just kind of what came into my head. And after that, I did feel like I had an attachment. I always felt like someone was watching me. If I was walking around by myself, I always felt like I heard someone right behind me or following me at a distance. And it was really freaky, but part of me was just like, you know, you're in your head about this. This is not real. And one night I was up in my room. My room was kind of the bonus room of our house. So it was upstairs and it was very open. There was a half wall, and I usually left the hallway stairway light on so I could see, you know, the light coming up over the half wall. So I'm laying in bed one night and I hear footsteps coming up the staircase, so behind the half wall. I just think, oh, it's my mom. She's going to tell me, you know, something I have to do tomorrow or whatever. So didn't think much about it. I'm just laying there. And suddenly I turn and there was a black shadow, a human-like shadow, and it was crawling at me very, very fast, and it scared me to death. I ended up reaching over and turning on my bedside table light right before it was, like, right on top of me. It was definitely one of the scariest things that ever happened in my life. The other experience I wanted to talk about was when I went to Iceland with my mom and my sister. We were there for 2 weeks. We did an entire loop of the island. It was very, very cool. Got to stay in a lot of places, most of which I cannot pronounce, so I'm not even going to try. So the crazy thing is that I knew nothing about Iceland going there. My sister planned the whole trip. You know, I have no idea about their culture or traditions. That was all new to me as I was in the country. And we stayed at a really old house that had been turned into a hostel. The house was probably, I would say, from the late 1800s. And it just had a spooky feeling to it when we got there. I was kind of looking around and I saw this box by the window. And when I opened it, there was like herbs and crystals and a tarot card. And so in my mind, I start thinking, oh, this is like a protective thing. And so a little creepy, a little weird, but, you know, it's a different country. They have different things that they do over there. So didn't think about it twice. That night, I had to use the bathroom, so I got up, walked across the hallway. The light kind of flickered on, and it was a little bit spooky. Went to the bathroom, came back to bed, and I was kind of asleep but kind of awake. And I felt like a woman was brushing my hair and, like, patting my head really softly. And that she kept saying, Solka, Solka, Solka. Like, over and over again, that's just what came in my head. Solka, Solka, Solka. I didn't know what that meant. The woman was wearing, like, a black 1800s-type dress, you know, that has a high collar and the white lace around the top. And so, again, I just thought, I'm being weird. I'm making things up. You know, there's no way I could visualize that in my head and it be a real thing. The next day, we went to a huge rock collection is the only way I can describe it. There was this woman named Petra, and she collected rocks from all over Iceland and put them in her yard. So now it's a museum and people go there. So we were there and her house is just the way she had left it. And I was looking in her bedroom and there was a picture, and it was a woman wearing the exact clothes that I pictured with the exact hair, everything, everything. It was the same. And then later I discovered that the name Sulca is a Norwegian name. And many, many people in Iceland have that name. So I do think that it was a connection with the spirit. And that didn't scare me, but it was very, very cool. Anyway, I love the show. I listen every time a new episode comes out, and I just appreciate you guys. And I'd like to call back eventually and share some of my other weird experiences with you. Thanks.
There we go. Very cool. Ooh,
look, Montana's a beautiful place.
It is.
Oh,
it is.
I'm afraid to go.
What are you afraid of?
I won't come back. I won't come back. I get up in that beautiful air. The only thing that would drive me back is the snow.
Yeah,
I
right.
do
That's a pain.
Hate the snow. Let me list.
It's fun for a couple of days, but when you're like in and all the time, right, then yeah. you're like, man, this is a pain.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine having to deal with it every day. Like, I feel for y'all. Like, you know, we complain, but look, it's awesome because we get 2 days of snow.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe it gets cold. Y'all know we get the ice, but literally don't want to deal with the snow. Look, before we take a break, I got to read you one more. This comes from Richmond, Indiana. Let me lay this on you of what we were just talking about. Here we go. This is a very difficult thing for me to write about publicly. It was such a strange experience. And I've only shared it with a few people because they tend to think I'm crazy when I mention that I saw a stingray fly over the street from one group of trees to another. I mean, we're in Indiana, nowhere near the ocean. And for one thing, and I've even lived by the sea, why would a stingray fly into the trees? So anyway, this is what I witnessed on my way to work one early fall morning about 6:30. It wasn't fully light out yet, but it was bright enough with street lights illuminating the road. And as I approached a four-way stop, of course, there's no cars around, so I continued driving, glanced up a bit, and I saw this giant stingray-like creature fly from one side of the street, emerging from a cluster of trees, and glide across the street into another group of treetops. Astonishment is the only word that can describe my reaction. I've never had a reason to use this word, that word before, but it perfectly sums up my feelings. I was saying, oh my God. I started praying. I said, Lord, what was that? It was just so strange. I felt like crying, overwhelmed with a mix of emotions after my initial astonishment. I kept questioning myself. Did I really see what I thought I saw? So all the way to work, I just repeated to myself, did that just happen? And for days, I couldn't stop thinking about it. So I finally told a couple of people, but I knew they wouldn't believe me. So I started looking at pictures online to find something I might compare it to, and came across a huge manta ray picture labeled Devil Ray. This led me to research demonic creatures and stingrays, resulting in a whole lot of information about water spirits. Now I genuinely believe that's what I encountered. For a brief moment, I saw a demonic water spirit in the form of a stingray. Our town has been known to give people the feeling of a demonic hold or something similar, and now I believe it. There are many issues that's of our city, and looking up these water spirits reveals the negativity they bring. Anyway, that's what I saw, and I'm relieved to hear that others have had similar experiences. It makes me feel like I'm not crazy, like I've not lost my mind. Thanks for sharing these sightings, T.
Wow.
So, another one. Look, I don't know. I have no idea if it's a demonic spirit. I don't know if there's any way that we could all just speculate and guess of what it would be. Is it like you've always brought up? Is this the remnant of a memory? Was that part of Indiana in some time in the ancient past, in the ancient history, was it underwater? And these things are just swimming, and that's just what you see. It just happened to look like it come out of a tree, happened to look like it go under, because a million years ago, it was, I don't know, 500 foot underwater.
Right, that's a good call.
Like, we don't know. Or is it a demonic water spirit? What's weird is he talks about, like, having this bad feeling in town of where they live. Like, is there something negative in and around this area? I don't know. I do appreciate the crazy stories, though. Indiana's got good hunting in and around there. And speaking of good hunting, folks, I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to jump back into whatever wildness Kyle has got laid out for us. I can't wait. I can't. Are you going to try to really creep us out?
Yeah, I got some crazy stories.
Dude, I love it when we start now, y'all all know we keep it creepy anyway, but we start kind of cranking it up a little bit when you get around fall because it's our favorite time. So let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll let Kyle give us some goosebumps. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Back with Expanded Perspectives. I got this story. It's going to be pretty interesting to cover. The woman says that she had a very stressful situation back in 1998. And to this very day, she still has trouble wrapping her mind around the strangeness of it all. She said, "Hello, my name is Kathy. I was a 41-year-old single woman residing in La Jolla, California, when I met a man named Hector." That's funny, when I took Spanish in high school, we each had to pick a Spanish name, and the name I chose was Hector. She says that he was around my age, and I met him during a community cleanup day, an event that was held once per month where people would come together, pick up trash in public places like parks and beaches. I feel like I must have always assumed the very best of everyone I met at those gatherings, because it seemed that only well-intentioned, selfless individuals would take time out of their busy lives to do that sort of thing. I'm not trying to say that Hector was a malicious man. I'm just implying that I probably assumed everyone attending those things was perfect and could never attract any kind of trouble my way. But I was wrong. At the time, I was working as a receptionist job at a veterinarian's office. I'm a huge animal lover, so in that regard, the position was heavenly. Seeing all those lovely pets every day filled me with joy. What wasn't so heavenly was the pay. At least living in California wasn't as expensive back then, so I could still afford a one-bedroom apartment. The place was tiny, but I have to say it had charm and was within walking distance of the water. I can't even begin to imagine what the rent on that place would be now. You probably need to hand over an arm and a leg every month. So, I'd been doing the same routine for a few years, and I don't think I even fully realized at the time how desperate I was to change things up. I needed something fresh. Hector wasn't the most handsome of men, but when he expressed his deep concern for the sea life choking to death on plastic, I knew I was interacting with someone I had a lot in common with. He was 5'6", which was an inch shorter than me. Believe me when I say, I could never have imagined falling for a man who was shorter than I. I always had chuckled over that sort of thing on the rare occasions I came across it. Hector seemed to admire the fact that I worked at the veterinarian's office, and that was when I knew we had a mutual respect for one another. It was nice to finally meet a man who wasn't solely concerned with finances. Every guy I had ever dated before then was so stressed out about money. That negative energy had a way of radiating off on them. In truth, I had such consistent bad luck with that kind of thing that eventually it made me lose interest for even dating. I couldn't remember a point in my life where I ever felt aligned with a man's energy. I think that's also the part of the reason why I ended up sticking to my minimal paying job for so long. I felt a solid connection to the animals, something I'd never felt with men. But Hector made me feel different right away. There was something about his presence that immediately felt like he could be a trustworthy friend. There wasn't any kind of overwhelming pressure for either one of us to come up with ways to try to impress one another, and that was comforting. One thing led to the next, and within a few months of seeing each other, he approached me about starting a new life together down in Mexico. He said it had always been his dream to own a farm and live in the peaceful countryside, away from the chaos of cities. He said he knew of a property that we could rent to own. Now, at first, I was a bit thrown off by the proposition. But then, I had an inkling that it was an opportunity for me to escape what had begun to feel like a very uneventful life. Here was a way for me to spread my wings and try something spontaneous, to take a risk and see where it leads. And on top of that, Hector had what sounded like a very appealing plan. First, he wanted to turn the property into a doggy daycare. That way, we'd be able to get a feel for the land while also earning some money. He said he already had a good amount of cash saved up that would provide a cushion for us to figure out how we want our future farm to evolve. I must have been so attracted to the romantic idea of doing something new that my mind was somewhat willing to ignore the fine details of everything. I wasn't considering that this whole plan could potentially turn into a mess. That was my fault. I should have been more diligent. I was so excited when we arrived in town. Since I still know and respect someone who resides there, I'd rather not disclose the location, but I will say that it's only a few hours south of the border. The mountain range that encompassed the place was beyond beautiful. Instantly, I felt like I had made the right choice. There was so much space to do whatever the heck you wanted. If we could eventually afford it, there was plenty of land for horses to roam freely, and I liked the idea of that. I immediately met a couple named Diego and Alejandra. Both Hector and Diego referred to Alejandra as Al. It turned out Diego was Hector's slightly older half-brother. It was during that introduction that I felt there might be some tension between the two brothers. Diego was significantly older, and I couldn't help but feel his disapproval of Hector, perhaps due to his past mistakes. I was reluctant to allow any chance of my new life starting off on the wrong foot, so I decided to ignore whatever was going on between the men. Al and I quickly hit it off, which created a nice distraction from the looming negative energy. Al was the first one to accompany me to pick out a dog from the nearest animal shelter. She also helped me design flyers that we gave to the facility, notifying them that Hector and I were opening a doggy daycare. We wanted all of the locals to know that they had a very affordable destination to drop off their pets whenever they were leaving town or working overtime. We came up with a clever name for the business that I wish I could disclose, but it's probably best I don't, just in case that it can be somehow traced. Our first dog was a yellow lab and a beagle crossbreed named Willie. That was already his name when we picked him up. I didn't care for the name, but since the dog was already 5 years old and responded to it rather well, it only made sense and logical to leave it. Willie appeared to feel right at home as soon as we let him out of the car. I got the impression that he had never before experienced that much room to run around. A few days after we opened up shop, Diego approached me in private. He handed me a few pages of forms, explaining that he was happy to have me as a tenant and felt that he could trust me. The whole thing kind of threw me off. The forms clearly stated the amount we still owed for both the deposit plus the first and last month's rent. Confused, I was about to ask Diego what this was all about, but then things started to become more apparent. I never doubted that Hector had feelings for me, but that was a separate subject from exaggerating about how much money he had saved up. Perhaps he was even in debt, and he needed a loving partner to help him get back on his feet. Without prying, that was the angle that I chose to view it from. Although I was a tad disheartened, I was so hesitant to cause a stir that would interfere with my exciting transition. And for some reason, I had such a good feeling about the dog daycare business that I assumed we could fix any financial situation and mend things between Hector and his brother. We had only had Willie for maybe 3 days, at the most, when I thought he had run away. Neither Hector nor I could find him anywhere. We allowed him to roam the property freely because he was so good about coming to us whenever we called. Anyways, a fence encompassed the large property, so he'd only be able to get so far, even if he was chasing a wild animal. Hector ended up being the one to find Willie's body. He brought me over with a flashlight. I'm not exaggerating at all when I say our dog appeared as though he had been had the life sucked out of him. And the light color of his fur made it easy to spot two deep puncture marks in his abdomen. He also had several lacerations all over his body, suggesting that there had been a struggle. But nothing was as prominent as those two puncture marks. Hector even mentioned how it looked like a vampire had attacked Willie. On top of feeling extremely sad over the loss of our new friend, something made me feel very uneasy about being out there. That's when I began to wonder whether it was wise to be out there after dark. That was the first moment I questioned whether I made the right move by starting a new life in Mexico. Something about seeing Willie's corpse with those puncture marks was simply not right. Hector said whatever he could to try to comfort me, but I could tell that even he was disturbed by the scene. He claimed to be a man of faith, and later that night, he confessed some things. Hector said he felt guilty about many of his past acts and that demons had lurked around him for years. He interpreted Willie's death as a sign that he might be next on the chopping block. The man cried while explaining this stuff to me, and even I had to interrupt him multiple times to prevent him from revealing things I'd rather not know. To calm him down, I tried to emphasize that dwelling on the past was counterproductive and that we were currently trying to do a good thing by building several honest businesses. I told him that's the only way to move forward was to focus on the tasks at hand, and he seemed to agree. That night, when it came apparent why Diego was skeptical about having his younger brother around, it made me respect Diego a lot more for his willingness to put up with Hector at all. So many people would have seen association with someone like Hector as too big of a risk. I suspect Al had a way of softening the stern man up a bit. We barely had time to consider what had killed Willie when a potential customer called us the following day. They wanted to drop off their two dogs before they left town for the weekend. Without hesitating, I agreed. Even though I was still disturbed, there was no beating around the fact that we needed to make some money. Sure, Diego was acting graciously for the time being, but I knew he'd use any opportunity to kick Hector out. I was desperate to confirm that we'd be able to stay afloat. Our first official patrons were a pit bull and a scraggly-looking mutt that was part of Aussie Shepherd, I believe. I was relieved that there were two of them, because I figured a predator would be a lot less likely to approach. It was in the evening when Hector and I heard a strange barrage of barking. Both dogs had been pretty quiet the entire day leading up to that point, so I knew there had to be a good reason that they then decided to sound the alarms. At the time, I was actually on the phone with another possible potential customer, and I politely asked if I could call her back. As Hector and I speedily walked in the direction of the frantic barks, that same overwhelming anxious feeling as before washed over me. It became increasingly apparent that something terribly was wrong, and soon I received confirmation why. The mutt ran around the weird-looking creature, keeping a safe distance, hysterically barking and growling as it watched the consumption of the pit bull. To me, the large gray animal looked like a combination between a dog and a pig. From where I stood, it didn't appear to have any hair at all. A long and thin ratty tail sporadically wiggled from the end of its body. Its back was towards us, but it was only a few moments after we saw it that it turned its head to look at us. Even though it didn't seem interested in attacking, its body language warned us not to come any closer. Like most predators, it was willing to do whatever it had to defend its prey. It wasn't long before I noticed Hector was muttering something in Spanish, and I later found out he was praying. To him, this creature was none other than a demon, and he was convinced that he was its primary target. I wanted to do something to help the other dog away from the scene safely, but neither of us were armed. The weird creature glared at us a few times before we finally started backing away. "What's all the noise?" Diego greeted us once we were nearly back at the house. I told him how there's a predator out there and that it's attacked one of the dogs, which prompted him to immediately go fetch a gun and drive his SUV towards the scene. Soon after that, we noticed the constant barking had ceased. I so badly hoped that the other dog hadn't been killed as well. That would have meant three dead dogs within a matter of days. I felt uneasy, but there's no question that Hector was by far the most disturbed. He paced back and forth in front of the house until Diego drove back and informed us that nothing was there, not even a corpse. I suspect that the predator ran off with its prey when it heard the approaching vehicle. Diego said he couldn't find the other dog either. I had trouble accepting that, so I asked him to drive me back to the scene so that I could help search the area. Diego wasn't exaggerating when he said there was nothing, and there was something so ghostly about the place. It was as though you could feel the recent carnage in the air. I woke up the next morning to learn that Hector had fled town. He at least cared enough to leave a note, suggesting that I vacate the land before it's too late. He again mentioned his belief that it was a demon that we saw sucking the blood from that dog. He insisted that it was a bad omen, one that suggested he was next. It seemed to me he thought he would be spending the rest of his days looking over his shoulder. When I informed Diego that Hector had left in the middle of the night, he explained that his brother blamed himself for someone's death over 20 years earlier. He didn't go into much detail, but it sounded a lot like Hector was part of a gang that murdered someone somewhere in Mexico. I have no idea how much involvement he had in the actual act, but something about the event made him think that he would eventually pay a terrible price. So, I can kind of see why he would think that the appearance of a very demonic-looking beast would scare him enough to leave town. I can't say for sure whether it wasn't an excuse to leave me, but his note stated that I would never be safe as long as he was around me, and that I didn't deserve that. According to the note, I had too beautiful of a soul to be anywhere near that kind of darkness. Maybe Alejandra had some influence on the matter, but Diego was kind enough to get rid of the contract we had signed, saying that he trusted me, but he had been fully prepared for things to fall through on his brother's end. The very next day, I began my move back to California. I know this might sound awful, but I'm so glad I never had to look at those dogs' owners in the eyes and tell them what had happened. That would have made things even more heartbreaking. Unfortunately, Al was probably the one that had to handle that. Of course, I did quite a bit of investigation into what that animal could have been. It wasn't long before I learned about the chupacabra, and that research became so much easier with the advancement of the internet. There are several reports out there that match the description of what Hector and I saw. Some people think it's the physical manifestation of a demon, whereas I tend to lean more towards the theory that it's an undiscovered animal species. Perhaps it has some relation to the vampire bat. It's because of that whole experience that I will forever remain open-minded to other people's stories. I don't think I ever would have believed my encounter had I not been the one to experience it myself. I feel horrible for the dogs that were taken that day, but I like to hope that the one I didn't witness the creature attack was eventually found. I suppose I'll never know. Kathy. The Chupacabra. Look, I live in Texas, and there's lots of sightings. I had one recently. A guy I know works at a park in Fort Worth, like these large botanical gardens that they have that are pretty cool. But he took a video of something, and man, I'm telling you, it looked like the Chupacabra. It looked like a mangy coyote. And the way the thing moved, it was just strange. What's crazy about the Chupacabra is the differences in their appearance. Like in Texas, they look like a dog, a hairless dog, hyena, something like that mixed. Whereas you go to Puerto Rico, it looks like a lizard, like a monitor lizard or something. And I don't know why they're both called the same thing. They should have two distinct different names because they're clearly not the same animal. Speaking of the Puerto Rican version of the Chupacabra, in August of 1995, the Cano Venas region of the island of Puerto Rico was hit by a spate of very bizarre attacks on farm animals. The unfortunate creatures, typically goats, chickens, and pigs, were found dead with deep puncture wounds to their necks and amid controversial claims that significant amounts of blood were missing from their corpses. Farmers in the area were all on edge, and the media had an absolute field day, and the people of Puerto Rico were plunged into states that ranged from fear to hysteria. When similar killings began to be reported in numerous other parts of Puerto Rico, that fear was amplified to even greater levels, all of which is hardly surprising when one takes into consideration the physical appearance of the beast that was believed to be behind all of the slaughtering, the Chupacabra. Now, the first person, so far as we know, to see the beast of this particular wave was a woman named Madeline Tolentino, who lived in Cano Venasis, the initial scene of all the action. She described it as a fairly compact animal that ran on two legs in a strange hopping style and which had what looked like a row of feathers, that's right, feathers, running down the back of its head and spine. As media interest grew and grew, so did sightings of the mysterious monster. But that's when things became not just interesting, but beyond interesting. There is a very good reason for that. Not everyone saw the same beast that Tolentino encountered, or at least it did not look the same. And that's what's so mysterious about the chupacabra. Is what's the difference between the chupacabra in Texas? What's the difference between the Jersey Devil in New Jersey? What's the difference between the chupacabra in Puerto Rico? Could they all possibly be the same thing? Because they don't look the same. It is one thing to suggest that in the 1990s, one unknown and dangerous animal was on the loose of Puerto Rico. It's quite another, however, to suggest that multiple strange creatures were running wild on the island. And yet, that appears to have been exactly what was going on. Unless, you know, all of these reports were of the same monster. But given their physical differences, how could that be? Very easily, that is how. If the chupacabra is a shapeshifter, that is, which is a theory that I have because I've heard of these things, maybe the thing can change its shape, like a skinwalker. Now, the first sighting of the creature in the summer of 1995 effectively dictated how the locals perceived the animal to look. Not everyone reported something that resembled the monster seen by Madeline Tolentino. In the days, weeks, months, and even years that followed, countless reports of chupacabra attacks on farm animals were reported. The problem, however, is that the descriptions of the beast varied to incredible degrees. In some cases, witnesses told of seeing an animal that did not have any feathering line running down its back and its head, neck, or spine, as described by Tolentino. Instead, they saw a row of menacing-looking spikes, which stood erect, around 4 to 5 inches in length, like a dinosaur. And of course, it would be very hard to mistake a line of feathers for a row of vicious-looking spikes. Then, there was the matter of how that animal ran. Now, according to both Tolentino and the majority of the early witnesses, this thing was a bipedal beast, albeit one bounced along in a bizarre hopping fashion. Others, though, were sure that the creature they saw ran on four limbs, and there was nothing bizarre about its movements. They were likened to the way in which a large cat, such as a mountain lion, would stalk its prey. And then the eyes. Some of the sightings involved creatures with bright blue eyes. In other cases, they were of a piercing, devilish red, and sometimes even glowing. Now, there is a woman that claims to have a killed chupacabra here in Texas. She had a taxidermist mount it, and it has these piercing blue eyes. So again, the descriptions vary based on the region, and I don't know why. And there's other descriptions. There was even the matter of the wings of the chupacabra. Yes, that's correct, wings. In some cases, but certainly not all of them, the creatures were said to have large, powerful-looking bat-like wings. In other words, they were black and leathery-looking. When faced with such stories, other witnesses swore the monsters had absolutely no wings at all. So why the different descriptions? You know? What? There's the gargoyles of South Florida. Could that be a chupacabra? You know, that one has wings. This one over here doesn't. You know, kind of like Bigfoot, you know, goes by many names and different descriptions, whether it's the Almasti, the Huron, the Yowie, the Skunk Ape, the Grassman, the Yeti. The abominable snowman, you know, they look different. But that makes sense, right? Because like a white-tailed deer in Florida looks completely different than a white tail in Kansas and completely different from a white tail in Alberta. They look different based on where they live. So it only makes sense that Bigfoot would look different based on where it lives. But the chupacabra, we're not talking about a heavier-looking one the farther north you go. We're talking about completely different descriptions. Some of them, they look like a reptile. Some of them, they look like a mangy coyote. Some of them look like a gargoyle with wings. Why all the different forms and shapes? I don't know. Is it a physical thing? Or, much like in Kathy's story, her boyfriend Hector, he believed it was something demonic. Demon-like. Is it a manifestation? Does the things you do in your life matter? And because of your poor choices and bad acts, could a demon manifest itself and attach itself to you and show up in the form of a chupacabra to prey on your pets and other animals nearby, because there's never been a case of the chupacabra hurting a person. They just seem to drain the blood of like a dog, cottontail rabbit, a cat, a squirrel. You never hear them attacking people, but there are a lot of missing people. So could some of the missing hunter stories be the result of they met a chupacabra, right? I don't know. We're never going to know. And that's part of what makes the stories fun, right? It's the mystery. I don't know what these people are seeing, but they're seeing something. And if you have a story that kind of seems like the chupacabra and you want to share it with Expanded Perspectives, we would love to hear it. ExpandedPerspectives@yahoo.com. 888-393-2783 is the hotline. Let's take a break. I'm Kyle Filson. This is Expanded Perspectives.
Yes. Creepy stories. If you have creepy stories of your own that you want to share with us, you don't have to ask.
Don't ask.
We talked about in the beginning. Just send it in.
Send it.
Email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com.
Stop playing around.
You can call the hotline like Emily from Montana did. That's 888-393-2783.
You can call us on our cell phone.
Exactly. And you can tell your story if you don't feel like typing it out.
Emily, hit us with that hotline bling.
Yeah, right?
We hotline blinging. Bro, I'm so ready. Excited.
I know it's that time of year again. Bow season is upon us.
Oh.
We're getting ready. The feeders are going. The stands are set.
There's pigs on 2-foot centers. I've seen a nice buck. I got doe everywhere. The problem is going to be the pigs. The pigs are always an issue. Now, it is funny. Like we've discussed, you listen to Steve Rinella and the guys on Meat Eater. They always like, if you could snap your fingers right now, Kyle, and every pig, every wild pig in Texas would vanish. Would you?
No.
Exactly. That's what everybody says. We hate them, but I love to shoot a pig.
It's fun.
I like the hunting of them pigs.
Is fun.
I do. I love it, man. I love they're just like mean little grizzly bears. But here's what I'm most excited about. I just love sitting in the woods. I love it in the cooler weather, sitting out there in the quiet. We bring our phones, but we don't really do anything with them. You keep them in a bag unless you see something crazy, then we can text each other. And then every now and again, Kyle will text if you're seeing anything. And we call them tangos, right? You played enough Call of Duty, you know they're the enemy. Any tangos in the woods? No tangos here. Yeah. Like that's what we. So, yeah, that's kind of the way it goes. So I'm pumped because it fires up this weekend down here, and I'm beside myself.
Yeah, I'm excited, too. The weather is amazing. Surprisingly, it's cooler this year. Normally, open weekend, I'm sweating to death. I'm not.
I think that's the reason I'm so pumped.
I might have to take a hoodie in the morning because it might be still chilly.
You may have to. You have to double up, right? You have to a little light jacket.
Mm.
And I love the way they taste, deer, that is. So I'm super excited.
Yeah.
I like to eat what they're made out of. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't. And also, I like to get a little scared.
There's a lot of coyotes out there.
There's a lot of coyotes. Y'all already know about the pig war. Next time we have a pig war, I need to find one of those. We used to have one. If not, I need to get one of those little portable audio recorders.
Just use your cell phone.
I don't know if it'll pick it up.
You need one of those ones that's got like a, where you can point that where it picks up the sound.
The parabolic mic?
Yeah.
Oof, I don't know if I want to hear their things back up. Oh, and let them hear the pig war. I wished I could have recorded it.
Remember
if it happens again, it's going down.
Remember back in the day, those walkers you could put in?
Yeah.
And you could hear like stuff. I tried it one time.
Too much?
Yeah, because I was hearing every bird walking through leaves, every cottontail. You're like, you constantly feel like something's about to come out and it's not. It's
that was 30 years ago. You might want to try it again.
It's true, technology.
Well, I'm just saying your ears, it probably dulled down quite a bit to where now you're like, hey.
The good ones is it would pick up any low frequency, but yet you could still shoot your rifle and it was hearing
protection. Yeah, those are awesome. I might need those, man. My left ear is about done.
Now you're saying it. I have terrible hearing.
Dude, my left ear is about done.
My wife knows that I have terrible hearing, yet continues to yell at me when I don't hear her.
Well, you kind of probably select that.
Are you making fun of a handicapped person?
That's exactly what she's doing. She should be ashamed of herself.
That's what I'm saying.
Can't help it. Just because I didn't wear hearing protection or I was wearing my earbuds or all that stuff cranked up way too much. Or I blew it out with a pistol. I mean, that's the other thing.
I never remember my dad ever giving me hearing protection as a kid.
Because he also didn't give helmets or eye protection. It was just, look, PPE was not a thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, folks, that's what we got going on. Hey, if you're interested in more crazy, creepy stories and you're not already an Elite member, you probably should be, because I've got some crazy, creepy stories from the great state of Nebraska. Brasky. Yeah, Bill Brasky. Nebraska, crazy, creepy stories. That's what's going to be on the Elite show this time.
That's right. You can just go to patreon.com/expandedperspectivesElite. Or Christmas is coming. You can give the gift of Elite.
Facts. Big facts.
Just go to patreon.com/expandedperspectivesElite/gift.
Gift.
That's right, folks. Well, it's time to get out of here. I got to get all my gear ready to go for in the morning.
Yeah, I got to go wash some clothes and sharpen some knives. I'm kidding. Everything's sharp. But I do need to wash some clothes.
Hope everybody out there has a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.